welcome to the Richards Report cassette tape series, presented by the Richards Report Newsletter.
Hi, this is Dr. Richard Matto, and our guest today is Dr. Mayor Levitt from Providence, Rhode Island. How are you doing today, Mayor?
Rich, I'm doing just great, thanks. How are you?
Just doing fine. I love doing this. I'm in a great mood. It's always nice to speak to such a wide variety of intelligent, innovative dentists like you. It's a blast. I love it. I got to admit, you're the first person that's asked me that, so I'll tell the truth. That's how I'm feeling today.
Sounds good to me.
Mayor, you were a practicing dentist for many years, and you're doing consulting full-time now. So why don't you tell your kind of story, how you got into this, for people that may not be familiar with what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I was in practice for 29 years, Rich, in Providence, Rhode Island. And we had a large three-doctor office that started with two rooms when I started it and got to be 12 treatment rooms on one floor and eventually with a staff of 22. We were routinely in the top 1 or 2% nationally as far as practice growth. And for the last 8 years that I was in practice, I had begun to consult on a very part-time basis, also very niche-oriented basis, to busy general practitioners and trying to be able to teach them the scheduling techniques that I had developed that had allowed me to practice in a profitable and a relatively stressless manner. And then when I retired from my practice at age 56, I began to consult on a full-time basis, and I discovered that there were a great many ways to help just about any dental practice improve. So I've had this unique opportunity of closely observing the behavior of, at this point, maybe about 225 dental offices, dentists, and their staff. And from the perspective, I have drawn some conclusions on what allows so many dentists to be able to achieve the maximum success and the maximum satisfaction from their practices that they deserve.
Okay, now hold on. Before you get to those things, let me ask you something, because you said you retired at age 56. Without asking your age, how many years ago was that?
Well, I just turned 60. I'm having a little trouble saying 660, but I just turned 60, and so I've been doing the consulting full-time for about 3.5 years.
Now, it's interesting that you retired at 56, and from what you've told me before, you were able to do that very comfortably through the practice of dentistry. But don't you come across dentists all the time that can't retire at 56 and can't retire at 60? And it's really sad.
I mean, it is very sad. I mean, the statistics show, and it really is borne out by the work that I do, I don't think that more than 5-10% of the doctors that I see and that I hear about are able to retire almost ever, you know? I mean, certainly not at 55, but even at 70, and be able to maintain the same lifestyle that they have. I mean, they cannot afford to retire. They have to keep on working.
It's really
sad. It's really sad.
It is. I think you should be able to retire at 50 or younger, but keep practicing because you love doing it so much.
Right. I think if you have the opportunity to be able to have that choice, that's terrific, you know? And I think that people might enjoy it more if they didn't have to work, if they sort of elected to do it, or did it on a part-time basis, or did it in such a way that they could still, you know, take advantage of the traveling and the trips and everything else that they'd like to be able to do. But it is sad, and I think that one of the problems is that a lot of dentists don't get good advice from good professionals all along. And all of a sudden, people will call me and say, well, gee, you know, I want to do what you did, and, you know, I'm 54 years old, and I've got $300,000 in the bank, so I think if I sell my practice, you know, they just don't have a clue as to how much money it does take to be able to retire.
That's for sure. Well, the true thing is the time to start planning is now, no matter what age. So hopefully many of our listeners have their plans well into gear. Well, anyway, I kind of sidetracked you there for a second, but
that's
I thought it was an interesting point. Now, you have come up with four major we'll call them issues or things, or four major parameters that you've seen in offices that have really achieved maximum success. And why don't you tell our listeners what those four things are that you've found?
Well, I think that the four things that I have identified are the ability to attract and maintain a great staff. That's number one. The ability to create a niche so that you can differentiate your practice from the competition. Third, the ability to schedule profitably and efficiently. This is so key. And lastly, the ability to let your patients know how much you care because you have been able to create an environment of delivering fabulous customer service.
Well, those are four great things. Now, as anyone can imagine, if we discussed all four of those things in depth, we would be having a six-hour tape series here today. So,
absolutely.
We were speaking about this before, and we decided to concentrate on a couple things, but mainly we'll start concentrating on the staff issues. And I honestly believe, and I think that you do too, that if you can attract and maintain a fantastic staff, you know, you've pretty much got it made. The other things will fall into place. And I think that if we can achieve the impossible here and in the space of 1 hour, teach every listener how to attract and maintain a great staff, I think this will be one of the most valuable tapes ever produced, because it's just such, not to put the pressure on you there, but
we certainly can give it a shot.
It's such a crucial issue. You just cannot have a great office without a fantastic staff.
That's right.
I mean, I think you can have a decent dentist and a fantastic staff and have an incredible office and not the other way around. Sometimes
And I think that too many dentists see it the other way. They it's an ego problem almost, you know, in that they don't know how to delegate and they don't know how to depend on a staff. But you'll hear me say over and over again that you absolutely can't have a great practice without a great staff. It's just too complicated today to manage a dental practice yourself. I mean, you need to be able to delegate, and of course you have to have the confidence in the people to whom you delegate. So that being said, we have to realize that the number one problem in dental practices today, and it's probably been this way at least for the last 3 to 5 years, is being able to find and keep quality staff members.
Well, why is that true that you said within the last 3 to 5 years? I'm assuming you're saying that it wasn't always that way, but it is now. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I think that if you understand the marketplace and the laws of supply and demand, that it all makes sense. And by the way, Rich, the problem that we're talking about is not just in dentistry. I mean, it's in every industry. Let me give you a few statistics. I mean, there's no question that there are too many good jobs out there with too few good people to fill them. The current projected labor shortage in the United States is 20% right now, and is probably going to be that way for the next 10 to 20 years. I mean, that's sort of scary. The unemployment, you know, is at a 30-year low, and it's interesting that in the past 20 years in the United States, the labor force has actually grown by 40%, which is a very large amount historically. But the number of positions that are available has grown by 50%. So another way of looking at it is, if you take the baby boomers, and everybody knows about them, they're the ones that we're all marketing to and talking about. They're the largest generation that was ever produced in this country. There's 78 million baby boomers right now, the oldest of whom are in their 50s. Well, to replace them is the next generation that are called the Generation X's. There's only 45 million of them. So you don't need to be a math wizard to realize that as these baby boomers retire, there's not going to be anybody to replace them. So I think that knowing this, in order to tackle this problem of being able to maintain and acquire a great staff, you really have to sort of think of establishing your staff as a long-term commitment, and it's going to be something that might take a couple of years. It's going to be a commitment to excellence, because I believe that excellence is really not an option if you want to have a fabulous practice. So excellence has got to be a requirement for employment with absolutely no compromises. Now, obviously, after hearing this tape, the dentists who are listening to this tape, if you decide that many of your staff are not truly excellent, by all means, don't go in there on Monday and fire them all. And is worth two in the bush. But maybe you ought to go in there on Monday with the realization that you want to practice in a different way and at a different level. And maybe you should begin to network and advertise and promote. And I think that we're going to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes, about how we can do that.
Well, I think it was interesting that you said you need to think of your staff as a long-term commitment, because I know that every dentist listening to this tape has been in the position where, for some reason or another, a staff member who has just been a real rock in your office, you know, somebody, a great, everybody loves, a real dependable, they, you know, there could be a job change or a health problem, or just,
yep,
for any number of reasons, they could leave on short notice. And the first thing you do is panic, and you almost want to hire the first warm body that crosses your path.
Right.
And it's just, it's not that simple, and it's worth the time and the trouble, and, you know, to use all these techniques that you're going to be talking about to find a person that's so right for your office and matches the personality and everything you
want
from a staff member.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And, I mean, there are opportunities through temp agencies to shore up a practice in the short haul. rather than just jumping, as you say, at the first warm body that comes in and can speak English and you know, let them have a job. I think one more point to remember is that in order to be able to attract quality staff, okay, you have to have quality staff in place, or at least the commitment to do so. So, you know, when you bring a good person in for an interview, almost you're not interviewing her. She's interviewing you. And I think they're going to realize that it's impossible to be a positive influence if they perceive that they're coming into a negative environment. So you need to be able to have a standard of excellence that's going to attract staff, just like you need to attract patients. So I think that this could be a bit of a catch-22, but, and it makes the job harder, but I think that the rewards are going to be so much greater when you get there.
What do you mean by makes the job harder? I didn't quite catch that one.
Well, I mean, I think the fact is that if you're trying to attract good staff and you don't have good staff to begin with, it's a catch-22. And so in a way, that's going to make finding these people harder because you've got to be able to communicate to them that, you know, you're in the process of trying to build.
Oh, you know, that's a really good point, too, because if you're putting up with negativity and attitudes and all that kind of stuff, and then you're interviewing someone or maybe even a patient of yours is thinking about going into the dental assisting field or whatever, and they see if they see what your office staff is like and they don't like that, well, then you're not going to get that high-quality person.
Absolutely.
All right, now let's get to the tough part.
Okay.
You just said why it's impossible to find people in the job market these days, but there must be a way to do it. What do you tell your clients when they say, I need to start building my staff up, we need more people, whatever, what should we do? How do we find these people? The classified ads aren't working. What are we doing?
The reason that I actually did spend a few minutes on this sort of philosophy, in other words, emphasizing that you really need to have a great staff to have a great practice, is sort of to prepare you for the search, because I believe that searching for the fabulous staff member is different from searching for just anybody to fill an open slot. You see, if you just go and place a classified ad in many parts of the country today, I mean, it's pretty much worthless. You know, even when you try to get creative, I'm sure you've seen these things, you know, hygienist wanted, will marry if necessary, and dental assistant wanted, you know, are you breathing? You're hired.
I saw one dental assistant wanted four hands, no ovaries. I thought, man,
right.
That is just
I like that.
Insulting.
That
but
you know, the fact is that anybody, as they say, who can fog a mirror is probably employed these days.
And you know, look at the classified ads in the newspaper. Some of them are so bad. It'll say, like, all abbreviations say, you know, dental assistant, P/T, and then give a phone number. And you think,
right.
You know, what is this? Who's going to call this ad?
No, I think that you've got to do something that's going to differentiate you. And so my first suggestion for trying to find a quality staff is to put pressure on your dental supply rep. And this is one of the major benefits to having a strong relationship with a rep. We certainly know these days that you can buy your supplies cheaper in lots of places. The fact is that a dental supply rep can be very valuable to you because they have a group of at least 100 practices that they interact with pretty intently, and they are aware of who is happy and who isn't. So I'm not going out and saying that you want to steal your best buddy's assistant, but in reality, the only place you're going to find somebody who's experienced is in someone else's practice. That's the reality of it. And I mean, when someone leaves your practice, God forbid, where do you think they go? They go to some other dental office.
Well, are you more or less saying that the only way to get a quality staff member is to recruit from another office?
I think that you wouldn't want to personally recruit from the other office, but the fact is that there are people, many people, who are working in practices who are not happy. You know, they've got a full-time position, perhaps they've been there for a while, perhaps a negative staff person has now come into the mix, they're not happy with it anymore, but, you know, so they sort of need a little nudge to get out of where they are. So if, in fact, the dental supply rep was one who was able to pick up on this, I think that there might be an opportunity for you that way to be able to take advantage of that. I mean, one man's good misfortune is another man's gain.
That could be true.
And so I think that just think of it, that you're creating a wonderful opportunity for some other staff member who's unhappy. know, that they're going to be able to come into your practice.
And, you know, it's a good point, too, because every office is not for everybody. I mean, you've
got
offices.
And, you know, things change. You know, it might have been good in the past, and now it's not good right now. And
or, there are dental assistants that enjoy working in huge, high-volume offices that see a lot of emergencies where they get to do pain relief and extractions and those kind of things. And there are other people who are more comfortable in what you'd call a boutique-type practice. So.
Right. And, you know, there's also there's geographical issues. I mean, we have such a mobile society these days. People might have moved, you know, and now they have a long commute to go to that office they've been for a while. And so, they like it, but they'd like to do something different. So I think that having the rep be aware of what you want is a good thing. Another suggestion that is something that I have found to work is what I call an in-your-face ad. And I use this to attract clinical people. In other words, for hygienists and for dental assistants. What an in-your-face ad would be something like this. It would be, you know, sort of in-your-face, very blatant. Busy general practice in Baltimore, Maryland, is seeking the absolute best dental hygienist in the state of Maryland. But if your clinical skills and your communication skills and your team-building skills are not absolutely excellent, I really don't think you should even bother to apply. But if you think you measure up to this challenge, you know, send in your resume. Salary is no object. Compensation will be delivered based upon your abilities. Something like that almost is sort of like a... Somebody reads that and says, well, I am the best dental assistant or the best hygienist in Maryland. I'm going to apply. So we always want to have them apply with a resume to a P.O. box rather than to your office number, because it very well may be that your office doesn't even know that you're looking for somebody.
You know, speaking of that, Sally McKenzie gave a great tip when putting ads in the paper, and that is always to say confidential interview. Just kind of insinuate that, hey, if you're working in another office and you're not happy, we're not going to let the cat out of the bag. This will be confidential.
I would absolutely agree with that, Rich. I think that is, because we've got to be able to give these people the opportunity to feel comfortable if they're going to answer an ad, that it doesn't come back and backfire on them.
Yeah, and I love the in-your-face ad. We had an example of that in a Richards report way back when, and I know a lot of people used it with great success, and it was very similar to the things that you just said, so
okay.
It's a great tip.
I'll tell you another suggestion that I found has worked very well for non-clinical people is a block ad, probably something like a 3 inches by 4 inches, that you run in the food or leisure or even the sports section of the newspaper. And I find that that this is a place where people will peruse, and it's not in the classifieds. And I've got to say that I don't necessarily believe that dental experience is an absolute criteria for employment at the front desk. I think that if you advertise for the kind of person that you're looking for, somebody possibly with good telephone and verbal skills, somebody who's computer literate, somebody who's a good problem solver, somebody who is customer service oriented, stable, mature, interested in a long-term career opportunity, I think if I could find somebody who met those criteria, I could teach her how to schedule, and I could teach her. You know, maybe I wouldn't be able to teach her in a week, but I think that I would be able to. By the way, you know, when I'm talking about her and him, every once in a while when you lecture, you run into somebody that sort of is objecting. And if there are any male staff that are listening to this tape, it's you know, obviously I'm not trying to insinuate that you shouldn't be working in an office. And obviously today, an equal number of men and women are dentists. So when we talk about staff, however, most of the time we're using the pronoun her.
Oh, you're so politically correct by saying that. You know, I think your tip of doing the block ad in different sections to look outside of dentistry is so valuable, and we overlook it all the time. And if you think how many qualified people to run a dental front desk are in the dental industry at this point, it's got to be less than 0.01%.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, I would so much rather, and I have many times, hire somebody with enthusiasm and a great attitude and a willingness to work and a love of what they're doing, rather than somebody with soft dent experience, like
right.
You see in the dental ads all the time.
But you see, when you don't see many people doing this, they're just advertising, and they're almost saying that, gee, I don't want to interview anybody without dental experience because it's going to waste my time. Well, that could very well be if you run a typical ad in the classified that doesn't say that. You know, you have everybody in the world, answering a telephone. Also, when you put a resume requirement, it really does separate out people. I think it elevates the number, the classification of the people who are responding to the ad. You know, another thing that I have found that works is to incentivize your staff with a significant bonus, I mean a major bonus, for finding somebody that you eventually hire, because they have lots of contacts, and I think that we ought to let them network for you. It's certainly in their best interest.
That's a great idea.
I think also that you want to, for certain, before any decision is made on a staff member, that they have to be given a blanket approval by your own staff. So you can even have people pre-interview them. If you've got somebody who has that kind of ability, then you interview them, and then in order to be able to make the final decision, let's let the staff come. I think you can also do things like working interviews. You can hire somebody and say, look, come on in for a couple of days. We'll pay you whatever it is. And I want to make sure, and you're always going to make this as a benefit for the staff person, not that we're checking you out, but we want you to be able to check us out. You know, come on in here, see if you feel comfortable. Do you like the vibes in the office? Do you like the pace of the office? Is it something that you're going to feel comfortable with?
And it does work both ways. It's good for everyone involved.
Absolutely.
That is a must. I totally agree. That's just a must. You've got to do it. You can't hire someone and just have them come in and be a bomb. It wouldn't be fair to anyone.
Of course. The last thing that I would suggest as a possible way of attracting people, other than cloning, is that I've seen countless times where a temp, somebody from a temp agency, is converted into a full-time, valuable employee in a practice. In other words, they come in, they thought that they didn't want to be full-time, that's why they went to work for a temp agency, and then they come into this office, and they're in love with the office. And so it's an opportunity to be able to do that. Also, for major positions, for, you know, possibly in the $2 million practice that needs an typical that needs really an office manager, because office managers aren't really needed in a lot of practices. I certainly think that under $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, that you don't need an office manager where somebody is actually managing people and not doing typical front desk types of responsibilities. But for those kinds of people, even using a headhunter it will work. And yes, you have to pay, but
we have to pay a temp agency too. And I've heard so many docs whine, oh, if I hire that person, I'll have to pay the temp agency $2,000. Well,
right.
Big deal. Pay them the $2,000. You've got a great staff member. You pay whatever they want.
Yeah, you have to do that, and we'll talk about that a little bit too.
All right. So a lot of great suggestions for finding staff. So let's say that people have taken your suggestions and they've found staff. Now comes another, maybe even bigger issue. How do you keep your staff happy and hardworking and loving their jobs and all those great things that we all need to do?
Well, I think that is really a very, very key component to having a successful practice, because our patients love long-term employees. They truly value those long-term relationships. They come back to our practices because of those relationships. They refer others to our practice because of those relationships. It makes us look good in the eyes of our patients when we have long-term relationships, because it obviously says a little bit about the way that we treat and manage staff. It might be okay for them to draw the conclusion that if he takes such good care of his staff, or if she takes such good of care of her staff, that he or she is going to take really good care of me. So nurturing staff relationships, I think, is not only necessary, but it's immensely profitable. In my experience, from interacting with maybe a couple of hundred different staff members every month in the course of my consulting, is that there are a lot of good people in dental practices that leave because of poor management and poor communication skills by the dentist. So I've got a bunch of suggestions how I feel about staff that I might be able to share with you, so that hopefully your staff would want to stay with you for a long period of time.
Okay, let's go with it.
Okay. I think for sure that you need to tell them you love them every day. Don't assume that they know it. Assumption is the lowest form of human communication. We need to be able to tell them, because the cost of staff turnover, as we said, and the stress of staff turnover is immense. I think that you need to go into a relationship with your staff, knowing that you, the dentist, are going to be giving 80% and expecting to receive 20% from them. Recognize this up front. It's almost like a marriage. To be successful, each person has got to be able to think of themselves as giving more than 50%. So if you each give 80-20, you're going to have a successful relationship. In order to be able to have a relationship with your staff, and I'm not saying that you're only going to get 20%, but if you believe that you've got to give 80%, I think that your staff's going to recognize how much you're doing, and it's going to come back to you.
One of those things where the sum is greater than the whole, whatever that cliche is, but it really is true.
And I think that you need to remember that your staff work with you and that they don't work for you. I think you need to also put a premium on having fun in the office. I think you have to be, I mean, I know I don't have to talk to you, Rich. I'm preaching to the choir here. But, I mean, I think you have to be professional, but you can't be rigid, you know, or think of yourself and take yourself so seriously that you don't have fun. I think that dentistry is such a stressful profession that we've needed got to be able to get through the day and have as much fun as we can. So I would also say that you really want to go out of your way to compliment staff at every opportunity. I think you need to routinely do it. It's something that you need to do every day. I think that when you do that and when you have that attitude, it also makes them realize that when you do find a problem and you bring it to their attention, it truly is a problem.
Compliments in front of the patients, too, are so great.
Oh, absolutely, because it just makes them feel so good. Because you never want to reprimand a staff member in front of a patient.
Oh, no, big no-no.
No. Or another staff member. You know, patients are in your office, and you may not be in the room, but they've got these highly tuned antennae that are always on. So you really have got to be absolutely careful about what you say. Another thing that I find that makes staff love their jobs is that you want to be able to delegate to the extreme. You know, wherever it's obviously that's legal. And I don't think you need to micromanage. I've seen so many staff people grow into their jobs if given the opportunity to make mistakes and also to learn from those mistakes and then to go on and make decisions. So you've got to be able to give people that opportunity. I think that we need to pay our staff well. We need to let them know it. I'm not particularly hung up on staff salaries as a percentage of overhead being 24.9%, or, you know, if it exceeds that, then you're doing things all wrong. I think that you get what you pay for in this world. And if you're going to have long-term employees, you have to be able to pay them well. All the studies show that even though compensation's about fourth on the list of what staff wants, everybody does like to feel recognized by a good paycheck. Another thing,
you know, not to interrupt you, I don't know if you feel this is a good idea or not, but I may as well throw it into something.
Sure.
I've done, because I believe in paying well also. And at the end of each year, you can even make up a list that tells the staff what their staff member what their compensation was, and that of course includes not just salary but continuing education expense if they've had paid holidays, if you you know, take your whole staff to Las Vegas for a fantastic seminar, for example.
Right. Do you happen to know of one?
Sure. You know, you list that on there if you have a pension plan, which is a great thing for many offices, not for all, but for many. You know, list that on there because the pension kind of goes in and goes out and you don't think about it. All the benefits that you've given your staff. And then a staff member will look at it and say, hey, you know, I'm not making $12 an hour. I'm actually making $17 an hour.
Oh, yeah. And I think that what you find is when you put those things down on a piece of paper, and there are forms available to help you do that, you find out that if their hourly wage, say, was $20, that when you add up the benefits, it now comes to $31. And I think it's very impressive when you are able to give somebody this package, and we're going to talk about annual job performance reviews, that it really sort of, they sort of sit up and take notice about that. So I think that in this environment where there's a shortage of employable people, I agree with you totally. You need to be really cutting edge with your benefit packages.
And let's face it, people talk to their friends. And if you've got a dental assistant who's, you know, in healthcare, in direct patient care, working their butt off, working really hard every day, and they're making the same as their friend who's a clerk at some store, you know, standing around gossiping all day, well, it doesn't seem fair.
No, it really doesn't.
So, you know, everybody needs to know what their true earning is.
And I think that we can't have we can't have rigidity in this. We need to be able to be flexible, because as your staff changes, as they mature, as they get older, they may be interested more in health insurance or 401ks. Maybe we've got young people in our staff, they're more interested in costs of daycare. So as the staff mixes, change, or as they grow older, whatever, we need to be able to keep pace with that. So I think that that's really important, to let them know that you care. And you know what? It's just so nice to be able to do these kinds of things for our staff, because, again, we can't have a great practice without them.
Well, that was a great suggestion. I hadn't thought of that before. So you're saying that somebody might want health insurance. Another person maybe that has a spouse that has health insurance may want you to pitch in for their daycare,
right.
And there are a lot of ways to do it.
Depending on the size of your staff, I mean, there are certain issues where so many people need to be able to participate in order for you to be able to get it into the office. But I'm just suggesting that there are lots of flexible ways, and we need to be able to be creative. There's a tremendous pressure, not only in dentistry, but in every industry, on keeping employees. I mean, there's so many jobs out there, and they see something, well, gee, this office allows me to do this. You've clearly got somebody who may be thinking about making a move. And that's why, as we mentioned before, you know, you have a dental supply rep who's going around to 100 different offices, they're going to have their ear to the ground. And that's why I'm saying it isn't like you'd be raiding that office, but that person's going to leave anyway. Why not let them come to your office, where you've got an opportunity to be able to employ them in a wonderful thing?
This is the end of Side 1. Please fast forward your cassette to cue up Side 2.